This is the beginning of class 3.
Sasi Bhagi Jushin Etosham Viravin Shinyan Dekyan Padi Sange Shindu Mithe Uwagi Jogunanda Shiva
that's what's happening when you come out of meditation on emptiness directly. Oh, Umze wants to do it. No, no. We usually do a Daki Jinto. You have to change that. Before a class, you don't say Daki Jinto. In general, you say Daki Jinto. But before a class, you say Daki Chinyin. Chinyin. So the Daki is the same, but you replace the Jinto with Chinyin. Instead of praying that all your general good deeds help people, this refers to the six perfections, you're praying that by the act of your coming to this class, you should be able to help people. So that's Chinyin. Chinyin means to listen to the Dharma. Chin means Dharma, Nyan means listen. And I have to say Chirshe, which means the act of explaining them. So I say Chirshe, don't get worried. You say Chinyin. And Jinsok is what you do in general, in your morning practice. Okay, so we were talking about Nyamshak. Nyamshak means the period when you're in direct meditation on emptiness. It happens for the first time when?
When you experience Shunyata.
Yeah, which is? Directly, talking directly.
Directly.
Path of seeing. Path of seeing. Don't worry about it. These are for the old students. There's a path called the path of seeing, mental space. And at that time, you enter Nyamsha on emptiness directly. You enter this kind of meditation on emptiness directly.
The path of seeing?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And when you come out of it, you enter a state called Jeto. And that's, you're out of deep meditation, and you're having these realizations, including what?
Four Noble Truths.
The Four Noble Truths. That's, the word noble is, as we said before, the wrong translation of the word papa, which means at that point you become a realized type of being, and those are called realized truths, arya. So, Nyamsha is as opposed to Jetop. Jetop is when you're seeing the Four Noble Truths, thinking about the Four Noble Truths. Oh, this is suffering. This is this. You actually realize them directly for the first time in ever. But Nyamshak occurs right before that, and that's when you're actually in deep meditation on emptiness. And that's the classic example of Nyamshak.
How is that different than another of these meditations?
Well, they all overlap and they're all fuzzy, and I'm giving you the major sense. You notice I said general sense and I didn't say definition because they all overlap.
So really that could be like a part of
Nyamjak kind of
when you're seeing.
Yeah. It is a kind of gomba. It is a thing in din. It's also a shine, shamatha. Okay?
Well, that's clear.
It's not one of the classic yomjuk. Okay, so I just wanted you to get a sense of these are the main places. It's also a shine, shamatha. Okay?
Well, that's clear.
It's not one of the classic yomjuk. Okay, so I just wanted you to get a sense of these are the main places. It's used in another case in the Heart Sutra. It says, the Buddha enters Nyamshak. And the whole Heart Sutra, the Buddha doesn't say anything except at the end. He says, oh, you guys did a good job. And the whole sutra is one of his students speaking to another of his students because he's in Nyamshak and he's affecting their minds. They're like puppets and he's making them ask each other questions. So that's Nyamshak. Those are the two classic examples. So if I ask you what's Nyamshak, you should say direct perception of emptiness, as opposed to Jetop, which is after you come out of that deep meditation and you start getting the popcorn, you know, ding, 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 I understand that, I understand that, I understand that.
Michael?
Yeah?
You only use Jetop for after the initial direct perception of emptiness?
Yeah, Jetop is always...
Michael?
Yeah?
You only use Jetop after the initial direct perception of emptiness?
Yeah, always after...
No, but you had made a distinction about the perception of the Four Noble Truths coming out of emptiness meditation as being something that happens when you first see emptiness directly. That it doesn't... This is not something that repeats itself every time you do emptiness meditation.
No, it does. Nyamshak means any direct meditation on emptiness.
No, I know. I said
Jetop. And so Jetop is any time you come out.
So it's not just the Four Noble Truths.
It's not just the first time you come out.
Yeah.
Can you write Jetop?
Yeah, okay, you asked for it.
Is that a meditation? It's not a meditation.
It's Jetop. Actually a state of contemplation, perhaps. It's no longer conceptual. It's no longer non-discursive thought.
It is discursive thought.
It is. This is this. This is that. Oh, this is this. This is that. It's exactly that. It's not like when you're perceiving emptiness and it's just like they call water poured in water.
Discursive thought about what you've seen in emptiness.
Thinking, I saw emptiness. Yeah. Jetop. Most of the paths have these two stages in them, the higher paths. But we, don't worry about it. If you haven't had it before, it's not on the quiz, nothing. I felt guilty because I left that out and everybody had trouble on the phone.
After
I did
you
that last time, you know, they called me up on the phone.
So this would be after you see the four Arya truths? Then Jetop?
You are in Jetop
when you see the four.
When you are seeing the four. Jetop means what you get afterwards. J means afterwards and Top means get. Alright? Okay, now actually we'll go on to the lesson. Alright? Who's squeak? Okay? Which one did we get? Alright. So tonight we're going to talk about we've had two classes. The first two were about how to get ready for meditation.
Great.
Preparing for meditation. And what did I promise you the second thing would be?
Condition.
Yeah, the environment in which you meditate. But we didn't get yet to how to meditate. And we won't for a while. Because the reason most people fail is that they don't do the stuff before the meditation to make the meditation go well. And we're going to see that tonight. He's going to actually say that. So the environment breaks down into six conditions. We call them the six conditions. As I said before, Tibetan Buddhism. Buddhism in general loves the three thises, the four that, the five that. It's actually a very good method. Mao Zedong used it in his little red book, if you ever read it. It was responsible for Tibet's law. I read it, you know the person's mind, you know. And he was very good at he's obviously a great propagandist, and so it's very helpful to remember things that he says the three dives before now. So we're going to have six conditions. Okay? The first condition is, now we're talking environment, right?
Is all of this out of Lungren Chenmo still?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I'm going to be telling you where all these things come from. Okay. In general, it's the Lungren Chenmo of Tsongkhapa. But as you know, Tsongkhapa was a great plagiarist. And it's considered good Buddhist writing if you're a plagiarist, because the people you're stealing from are enlightened beings. So why write anything new? You just cop things from other sutras and put them in a new order for the new generation, but you don't write anything new. And that's fine. In fact, it's considered a fault if you try to stick in your own ideas. So this is Jeton Kapa relying on several other books, and we'll talk about it. Several classic books from ancient India. Okay, so Tumba means, I think we talked about it last time, Tumba means when two people get along, harmony. So Tumba means conducive. And Yu means play.
And like the dog.
I know.
It also mean like land or country.
Yeah, Yu generally means country. And you don't have to know that. Generally in philosophy, it's a very important word, meaning object of the mind. But we won't. Tsongkhapa takes his description of a conducive place to meditate from the following book. Say Dode again.
Dode again.
Dode again. The Sanskrit name is Sutra Alamkara. We talked about this before because we had the Abhisamma Alamkara. Alamkara is a Sanskrit word that means get ready for something. Alam means get ready, and kara means prepare. And when a princess in India went to a ball, she would alamkara her. She would put her jewelry on. So alamkara means a jewel, in the sense of jewelry. And sutra means any open teaching of the Buddha spoken by a Buddha. So it's the jewel of the sutras. And it's written by, it's not a sutra, it's a commentary on sutras. And it's written by, who wrote the other one? The other Alamkara. Remember?
What was it? What was that one called?
The Abhisamma Alamkara. Jewel of Realization. Ornament of Realization. He wrote the commentary. Good. Not bad. Asanga. You have to know Asanga, alright? Asanga lived when? You guys know.
About
350? Yeah. About 350 AD. I told you this story before. His mother was a nun. She had a vision that if she... Buddhism was declining in her era, and she had a vision that if she gave up her vows and married a king, that they would have a child, and that if she then married another, a Brahmin, they would have a child, and that those two sons would become the two greatest scholars of all time. So one of her sons was a son. And between him and his brother, they wrote every single book that's used in the monastic curriculum, except for, I mean, they wrote two of the great five books are by those two brothers. So they're responsible for just about, you study the first book for 12 years, you study the second book for about 3 years. So that's, they wrote the most important. So Sangha has written this book also, Sutra Alamkara, and in that book, he explains what's a good place to meditate. So, yes.
Jewel ornament of realization. Jewel ornament.
You can call it jewel ornament. Some people call it jewel ornament. Some people call it ornament. Some people call it jewel.
Some people call it realization.
Of realization. This is not that. This is the jewel of the sutras. So he wrote two jewels.
Sutra
this one is the jewel of the sutras.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about those guys studied the other jewel of the course, for the whole course.
How do you get jewel out of this? I thought you said it was to get ready for a sutra.
Yeah, get ready means...
Put on your jewels.
Put on your jewels. So the word get ready became the word for jewel in Sanskrit. Alankara became the word for jewel because it's what you put on to get ready for a ball or something. So Dodegyan. In there, he says a good place to meditate should have five characteristics. If the book from which Tsongkhapa has taken the description of a good place to meditate, a conducive place to meditate.
When you say it's in the book, this list, are you talking about both books or?
It's actually three or four. It's a stream, and I.
Well, what should we refer to it as?
If I ask you who described, and I'm going to ask you, the conducive place to meditate, you're going to answer. Sangha described it 358 in his Jewel of the Sutra.
Now, is this Jay Tsongkhapa's commentary, though, or is this a Sangha?
Tsongkhapa is quoting him. Tsongkhapa is explaining what a Sangha said, because if you go and try to read a Sangha, forget it.
And this is just Jay Tsongkhapa in Lam Rim Chen Mo explaining Sangha.
Which is like, Buddhism is like an onion. I mean, Buddhist learning is like an onion, and you get deeper and deeper, and you get closer and closer to the middle the longer you study. So, the first point, and it's in your reading, is that you should have all the necessities you need. It should be easy to get food, clothing, in other words, everything you need physically should be there. Now, he's mainly talking about an extended retreat in which you're trying to develop shamatha purposely. Which you can do in like 6 months if you really.
Shamatha.
Yeah, shamatha meaning what I translated here as quietude, which you had in your first homework as that very, very high state of meditation with which you see emptiness. Quietude. Excuse me?
King of Samadhi?
King of all concentrations. So, anyway. This is mostly referring to a real heavy-duty retreat that you do. The place where you do it, you should have everything you need.
You mean you shouldn't ever have to leave to get things? Is that what you mean?
Well, that's one meaning of it. But you shouldn't have to think about anything else.
Like, oh, there's no electricity.
Food should be set up for you. Yeah. People tend to think, you know, when the Buddhism first came to America, I don't know if you knew Alex Matico. He heard about Milarepa. He went out in the forest next to our house. And he got cold and came back after 2 days. I mean, it doesn't work. You have to be comfortable. It's very smart to get a place, make sure it's nice, and it should be comfortable. And everything you need is there. You have someone cooking for you. It's very bad if you have to cook for you. Someone else should be cooking. Because otherwise, you're going to think, what should I cook tonight? You know, I have to cook. Maybe I should put. You start meditating on what you'd like to eat tonight. It's very bad. Someone else should be cooking. You should have no contact with him. In New Jersey, we've done it. Tom did a good meditation. They put it under your door or something. You don't know what you're going to get, so you don't worry about it. And that's better. And you should have enough clothes. Take enough clothes. They should be clean. You don't have to be all dirty. Paboga in his meditation manual says. I don't like this thing about monks in retreats where they can have a beard after 3 weeks. No, you have to be clean and shaved. Be normal. Be comfortable. That's the idea. Your meditation is a lot better. Because you're not meditating on how much a bigger yogi you are. You're not meditating on trying to stay warm when it's cold. And it's very important to be comfortable. So that was the first thing that a Sangha said 1600 years ago. The second thing is that it should be a safe place. And Tsongkhapa explains that to mean there shouldn't be any wild animals around the country. This refers to people in India or Tibet who would go up in the mountains. Or if you know Yeshe Dumbinko was here last week, he spent most of the year up in a cave above Dharamsala. And It's a problem. You get. I've had bad stuff. A little scary. Shouldn't have. Very much interrupting. I had a skunk one time.
Oh, man.
It's very bad. So it should be a place where you're not threatening anyway. And they also say bad people, that you shouldn't have any place where you have an enemy or someone who doesn't like you. Any kind of a threat to you. Or it should be a comfortable place.
What's the word for that? Okay,
I can give it to you if you like, but it's in your reading.
Okay.
And he, the verse is very cryptic, like all the ancient verses were. They were meant to be memorized by the student maybe 10 years before he knew what it meant, and they still do that memorize them. And then the function, the role of the teacher is to tell you, hey, this is what that means. Then he says you should have a good environment. And he explains that as meaning it should be a place where you don't get sick. There's places like the first monks that came out of Tibet in 1959 were meditating in a place called Baksa. And it was in the jungle in West Bengal. And it was just a lousy place to be. Almost, I'd say maybe a third of them got the tuberculosis. It was very damp, very hot. They didn't have enough nutrition. Their lungs were expanded from Tibet, and most of them got sick. So it should be a place where you're not going to get sick. Shouldn't be too cold, shouldn't be too hot. The temperature should be just right. When you're meditating, it's very important that the temperature is just right. If it's too warm, you start to nod out. If it's too cold, you get distracted.
So now, in the sense of a long retreat, you know, you're going to go through seasons, for example. Would that mean try to find some place where you're not going to have, like, heavy snow or hot winter?
Well,
or
where inside is not going to...
So,
don't be shy to get a place with central heating.
Or air or whatever.
I did a retreat in Arizona one time. The weather changed 40 degrees. It was too hot in the afternoon, and by night it was snowing in the desert. And it was distracting. It got very cold. So, you got to find a place where the weather's... But you also have to make sure that whatever it is that you use doesn't make noise.
The heater and stuff?
Yeah, like if a fire is very distracting, a heater that goes click, click, any noise, after you've been in retreat for about a month, a mouse can be a disaster, and they are. So you have to find, just don't be shy to find a normal house in a normal place, away from sound as much as you can. I think a refrigerator can be a disaster. I found it there. If you've done a retreat for about a month, it starts to sound like a truck. And then you go and unplug everything in the house before you sit down. It's very distracting. It's very important that you don't have any noises. And in your daily practice, we're talking 15 minutes, half an hour, the good thing about doing it is early in the morning or as you can, which I find better than late at night, but I saw in your papers a lot of you, maybe you just don't have time till late at night. Late at night is good, and we'll see it later, in that it's quiet. At least in general, it's more quiet in the early morning than late at night. Because sound, it's very famous, in all the scriptures it says that sound is the worst distraction. Sound is very bad when you're trying to meditate.
The squirrels digging into the roof.
We have squirrels. Okay. Number four is, he calls it good friends. And it's that whoever's assisting you in the retreat should be a person who has faith in the Dharma. And he shares your values. He has good morality. And he believes in the Buddhist worldview, which, mostly emptiness. Should be a person like that. If you've ever had a person... you're in retreat, and because you don't have any choice, you have someone coming to help you. You have to have a retreat assistant. You may never see him during the retreat. It's better if you don't. But it should be a person who's mentally in tune with you, because you'll sense it and you'll feel it. And it's better if all the people around the retreat are into it. And the same in wherever you're going to meditate. If you try to meditate in a place where people don't appreciate it or people don't like it, it's very hard to concentrate. So that's all coming under. These are all still under this. I'm not going to ask you to label all five. If you remember some, it's fine. The fifth one he gives is, he says it should have goodness. the verses, all the verses just have goodness, and it says in the day there should not be too many people around, and at night there should not be much sound. So it just means that there shouldn't be distractions, people or sounds. When you do a good meditation, a retreat, don't waste your time. It's hard to get the time in your whole life to do a 1 month retreat or a 2 week retreat. And don't waste your time. Set up everything very, very intelligently, you know, based on this. And talk to people who've done long retreats before. And they have, after you do one, it's good to make a list of all the things that you did wrong. And then the next time you do it, you know what you need. Like chapstick is very important. Incense is very important. You know, you get a list of things that are very important, and you learn more about it every time you do one. So talk to people who have done long retreats before, and don't screw up the opportunity, because once you get into the retreat and close the door, you're not supposed to go out for a month or something. And if you figure out that you forgot something, you have to start writing notes, and then that's a distraction. Better if you don't see anyone. You know, close the windows, tape up, put something on the windows.
How long should one go into a retreat?
I think in our tradition, I mean, there are 3-year retreats, there are 3-month retreats, 3 years, 3 months, 3 days, 3 months. But I think if you, for example, if you take that initiation this summer, if you've had that initiation, you will be required to do a certain number of retreats. And they last between 4 and 5 weeks. And they're very great. Because once you take the initiation, you swear to do it. And I know I worked for 10 years, I didn't have time to do anything. I was exhausted every day, and I didn't do any retreats. And then I got on a different schedule, and I was able to do them again. And it's a very good, it's good to be forced to do one. Because otherwise you'll just go on and never do one. And it's very important to do them. They change you dramatically. So it's very, then especially those retreats, which you have, there are books on how to do it, the training, everything, and they're wonderful. They come out really good. And they're not what you expect. What you're supposed to do is not what you expect. And it works. It's very nice. The Kylie did, how many did you do? 1, 2? It's one of the Shiraz. Other people. They're very good. If you do it right, it's very nice. And if you do it wrong, you can crack up, and people do that. So you have to study how to do it properly. And then you won't have any trouble. It'll be quite pleasant.
Do these pertain to group retreats also?
I've been in group retreats. We don't emphasize that, but I think some people have said they might like to do a group retreat. I think it might be distracting, but then again, they say if you meditate in a group, sometimes the power of the unity of all the minds and all the people is very, very good. So I think, I think they would also apply. And obviously you're going to see other people in the group retreat. Good not to talk with anybody. You shouldn't see anybody, you shouldn't talk to anybody. Anybody.
One again, Michael?
He said, what was it? Having goodness in the sense, and he lists only two things. During the day, there shouldn't be a lot of people around, A, and there should be no sound. No sound.
So,
it has nothing to do with goodness. But
has nothing to do with, like, if your mom had meditated here before.
No. It's a very difficult verse, and it's a copy of explaining it.
So when you say cover the windows, you mean you shouldn't really even be able to see what's outside the window? Is that what you mean?
No, like where I used to go, there's a beautiful snow mountain at the back. So I would leave a little trip across the top of the window. But what I mean is you shouldn't be able to see any living beings.
But
squirrels,
like,
dogs, people.
No movement, no activity?
Yeah. Tape it up, you know, to the top of the window if you can. Or I like to use these white curtains, these, what do you call them? They're the inside of a curtain. And then the light, you can get the light and you don't have to see anybody. And then the light is very nice. It's very helpful sometimes when you meditate.
So looking at the scenery is okay or no?
It's okay. But if you are if you're below 6 feet, you're going to see somebody if they walk by. So, I mean,
saying like if you're out in the middle of nowhere,
yeah,
in the desert.
Right.
You know,
that's all right, but in, I've been there, and there's all sorts of things for everyone.
Why can't you see an animal?
It's very distracting. It's just very distracting. You should be in complete solitude, and it's better. It's really better. Because what it does, it forces you. Also, you should, we'll get to it, but you, and don't write it down, but you should have no other activity. I used to try to memorize the text while I was in retreat or do anything else. You should have nothing else. And then what happens is you get. What do you call it?
Stir crazy.
No, I mean, you get the isolation drives you into your mind.
Yeah.
And you get good results. And if you have anything else to do, your mind will grasp onto it and distract you. You know, if you have to do anything else, your mind will grab onto it because it's lonely. And it'll distract you. And it's important to drive yourself into this isolation that you're just forced to live in your mind. And then you can develop some good meditation. And it's new. You've never had a day or more than a few days when you weren't talking, for example. And that's hard. All that energy gets driven in and you have good meditation.
So if you're doing a month or a 3 month or a 6 month retreat, you're not supposed to like go out and walk around outside or zip it. Oh my God.
True.
6 months, you're like not going outside, not walking.
I mean, a true retreat, yeah. It's important to have enough place, I've found, to walk around inside. Because that's just, in case you get, there's a thing called loom, which is like psychic energy, which builds up. Mm-hmm. And if you start to have a problem, it can cause a big problem. You know, you won't sleep for a few days, and then you have to break the retreat and go to the hospital. They shoot you up with something in your sleep. That's very common for people who don't know how to do retreat properly to get loon. And very common for people to experience bad disorder, like, you know, serious things where they can't sleep for a week. And then they have to break the retreat. So it's very important to do it right. And food is very important to eat. To eat very well. I know Goenka, who's a great meditation master from Burma, who the Dalai Lama sent to the monastery to teach us. He would feed you well, you know, royally. And it's important you eat well. If you don't eat well, if you eat a lot of sugar or starches or coffee, Coca-Cola one time, maybe ice cream. You can't have any of that stuff because it will hurt your wings and you can go crazy. So you have to eat very oily foods, very heavy foods. They keep you down.
Grounded.
Mike, what about taking your offerings out at the end of the day? Is that something that you should have your assistant do for you? You shouldn't even go out to do that.
No, the line, normally the line of the retreat is the door threshold. And you seal the door. I would put them in a garbage bag, and I had a neutral territory, like a foyer, you know. Put them out there, I close my door. It's good. You shouldn't see anybody. It'll just drive you into yourself, and meditation will be great. Okay.
What about sleep?
It's very important to sleep well. And later I'll teach you, we can't do it in this class, but there are instructions about that, special instructions about that. So if you ever do a retreat, we'll talk about it. But in general, you shouldn't try to be a hero. You should sleep. There are periods for sleep that are different, but in general, you get a good sleep. A good 8 hours is very nice in your meditation. Enough sleep is very important in your meditation. Any extreme action is going to make you nuts. You have to just be normal. Good eating, good happy thinking. By the way, no music. That's a disaster. No TV, obviously. No books, no magazines, no newspapers, no personal matters. Those are all a disaster.
No Dharma books, no.
Dharma book, if you're getting loom. And you see, that also becomes a distraction. It becomes an excuse to not think and not be inside your mind. And you'll find that you're craving it, you know. And it's not because you want to study Dharma, it's because you want to have some stimulation, you know. So, that's better.
What about a book that's on the particular practice?
Well, that's good, but it's better if you can read it before. You should. You have to have some prayer books. You have to be doing some
practice.
And if you have a commentary, but even the commentary can become it's better to learn it well and go in. Because you'll find yourself reading the commentary not because you want to understand the practice, because you want some kind of stimulation other than thinking, you know. And it's good.
Could you say a little bit more about Lung?
Yeah, Lung is, some in the West you would call it what? Like frustration or anxiety or... It's explained as some kind of...
Maybe you call it low blood sugar.
It's, technically speaking, it's happening in the nervous system. It consists of energy in the nervous system. And it starts to feel, it's called air, but it's not air. It's not physical air. It's psychic air or mental air. And the symptoms of it, and you should know, because many people have a dangerous problem with it when they do long meditation. You start to feel bloated. You start to feel anxiety. Your stomach goes out a little bit, and you start to get short of breath. Your breath speeds up, and you feel like you can't breathe very smoothly. You feel a little dizzy or lightheaded. You break into giggling sometimes. Get silly. With nobody around, I was getting into this tremendous laughter about thinking of a prank on my brother who I haven't met for a long time, just starting to giggle. And what else, Carly, you know about
it. I think if you start thinking a lot of interesting thoughts and you start just fixing on them and then not sleeping, thinking about
not
them
sleeping
all night.
That's the biggest one. The biggest, like if you're in deep meditation and you start not sleeping, that's very bad. One person who you're supposed to communicate with is your lama. He should be close by. At least in necessity, you should be able to phone him if you can. Otherwise, by the way, no phone. If you can take it out, don't have it available to yourself. He should be available to help you. So it's very good if you can do a retreat near your mom or where you can at least contact him and get his advice. Sometimes it's better to just break it and start over again. So I think the worst sign is that you'll start not sleeping.
Especially if you're having wonderful thoughts and realizations as a result of your meditation and you start staying up all night thinking about those. And then what about eating the right food to try to counteract them?
Yeah, it's like heavy food.
I mean, a lot of protein and meat.
You're vegetarian. It's very important to eat a lot of protein, like cheeses and nuts and sour things. But I think that depends on each person.
Yeah, I was going to say, my experience is just the opposite.
Yeah.
I was taken off oils completely because I had problems with being too sweet.
So it might, I'm talking about when you have the opposite.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it more. We'll get to it later. Okay.
So those symptoms like shortness of breath and can't eat smoothly, is it all that over what period of time?
I would say if you're really having a lousy meditation retreat, they could start happening within 2 or 3 days.
No, but how long would they go on for that needs to make it a concern?
Well, I'd say if you don't sleep more than 2 days, you should stop and seek some, get out. And start, and you say, okay, it's a good deed, I tried, and I'm not ready, and next time I'll do better. I have to do better preliminaries. And there's a time when even great heroes run from the battle and come wiser. Many people have been badly hurt by that. In hospital. You don't want to do that. If you do it happy, everything just right, all the preliminaries right, it's just smooth. And you hear these stories and you say, I don't know why these people do that. I think they come from... I know one case, famous case in ours, where we grew up as Dharma students. The person, the Lama told him not to do a certain practice, and he did it. And he went crazy. And he was in the mental hospital for a couple of days.
Temporary insanity? Or?
Yeah, very temporary. He came out after. But there was nothing to do. We had to take him to the So I think it's you have to follow instructions. If you do, they go, I don't want to scare you. 90% go very, very smooth, very nice, very happy, blissful. I think David was telling you about some of the retreats. They don't always start very good. Your back hurts for a while. You got to also tough it out sometimes.
So what is it that would cause you to go to the hospital, I mean, actually? From
too
the,
much moon.
I mean, but how would that cause you to go in the hospital?
No, the guy just got out of, he got wild.
Not the mental hospital guy, but like a physical hospital.
Oh, I think not sleeping for a long time, and then you get, you don't eat well.
Is anybody deprived of sleep long enough takes on symptoms of like schizophrenia? It's, once they get sleep, it usually goes away right away. Air Force is tested.
Here's number two. It's the second condition. Now, this is not really part of your environment. It's more of an attitude. Dzogchen Chenwa means you don't want many things. Dzogchen means want. Chenwa means little. And it's the kind of attitude where you don't need much. I call it few needs or something. You just don't need much to be happy or to be satisfied. Its cousin, its brother, it's Chokshepa. Chokshepa means it's a Tibetan word to be satisfied, easily satisfied with whatever you get. So what are the difference between the two? Dzogchen Chenwa means from the beginning you don't want much. And Chokshepa means whatever you get, you feel, okay, that's enough. Those are two different mental functions. This comes from a very, very fantastic book called Abhidhamma Kosha. I remember when I was a student and I used to get frustrated by these Sanskrit words. They just went on and on and I couldn't remember. I couldn't see any difference between most of them. Sanskrit is written without any spaces. Because when one word gets close to another word, they join. And they become the joining, the two letters at the end form a new letter. So you can't break it apart, and it's very hard to read Sanskrit. Abhidhamma means higher knowledge. Kosha means a treasure.
This is the brother?
Yeah, I've got a trick here after. I misspelled this. I think there's an page in here, but I always forget what it's here. I worked for 10 years on this book. I'll put it here.
So then the first one is from Asanga, and then these two are from Dasabandhu?
I think I misspelled. I'll check it for you. Dasabandhu is the other brother. He's Asanga's half-brother.
Were those books written in Tibet?
No, this is in Sanskrit.
It was written in Sanskrit?
Yeah, about 600 years before Buddhism came to Tibet. And so these are by the ancient...
All of them were written.
All the books we're going to study in this five-year course started in ancient India. They are the original books of Buddhism. So Vasubandhu wrote the Abhidhamma Kosha. When do you think he lived?
Around the same time as his brother.
Okay, easy. Yeah, I have it wrong.
How was he the half brother?
Well, remember that he came. I don't remember which came from Brahma.
She married.
Brahma,
she got around for that time.
She had two. Be careful. She's a holy.
Around in the
holy way. He has a chapter. His book, the Abhidhamma Kosha. I spent 10 years translating the first time I was coming to it, and it's incredible. It's just incredible, and. We'll study it someday. In the monastery, you study it just before your Geshe exam. And these two principles he lists as important for meditation. Okay. So, in general, your meditation can't succeed. Once you go into that room, forget about everything else. You don't need anything else. Live without whatever you live without. Be happy with whatever you have. If you're thinking that you need one more thing to do with meditation, or you need something else, or you have any desire for anything in general, and he's talking before the meditation too. If you're a person who's hoping to get a new house, hoping for a new car, hoping for a higher position at work, not satisfied with what he has, which is a disaster. I think there was an ancient king called Nanenu. He was a Buddha. He was the Buddha in his former life. And he said the greatest suffering in the world is that people are not happy with what they have. They always want more. Mm-hmm. And if you've seen that with your job or whatever, you know, I started my job at $7 an hour. I was very happy. And I remember every year I always thought that wasn't enough, you know, and every year they would raise you. And then if someone asked me now, would you work for $7 an hour? I would say, are you crazy, you know? But that's a result of not having chokshepa. Chokshepa means, you know, whatever I can get, fine, it's enough. I don't need more than that. You can't have a good meditation unless you really have these two thoughts. And you can't have them, you can't not have them up to the time you walk in the meditation place and then suddenly get them. You know? They have to start from your life, from your daily life. And they're very useful. I mean, that monk that I spoke about, Yeshe Bundu, I heard a story last night that he lives in Dharamsala in a cave, and somebody he always walks around with his robes up to here, and he looks like a dork. And I saw him in the fourth order on the way here last week. And he just looks goofy, you know? And I found out he does it on purpose. He doesn't want to be proud. So he wears his robes like, he looks funny. And somebody gave him a new robe, and he burned them. And because he doesn't want to be tempted by it, you know, and he purposely doesn't give himself anything to be tempted about. So that's Dzogchen Choshu. It doesn't mean to go to work sloppy and purposely don't iron your shirt or something. If you're going to work and you have the right, you need to have Yandapi Tsongkhapa. According to Buddhism, you need to support yourself and not grumble off on the people. And you've got to stand on your own feet and not bother other people. So you should have a job. It should be a nice job. You don't have to do anything wrong. You should look neat and nice, and you should do okay. That doesn't mean that. But it means be satisfied with that. Don't go to Macy's if you can go to the other one.
To the grocery?
Someplace.
Salvation Army.
Yeah, again, they're kind of hard to distinguish. Dzogchen Choshu means not wanting many more. And Chokshepa means being satisfied with whatever you get. It's not quite the same. Dzogchen Choshu means from the beginning you don't need much. And Chokshepa means whatever you get, no matter how lousy it is, okay, that's enough.
Does this apply only to worldly things, or what about your, like, hunger for the Dharma? Are you supposed to be satisfied with...
No. No, you're supposed to be thirstless.
But also not attached. You got to be willing to let go of whatever you can get.
It's dangerous to be attached, but I remember when I went to New Jersey 20 years ago, and there's this old monk, and there's this other student there named Art, who's a great scholar. And he said, it's very good you have Art. And I said, why? He says, well, you'll be jealous of him, and you'll compete with each other in your Dhamma studies. And you'll push each other. And then later you give up the jealousy, okay? So, I mean, he's joking, but I mean, you can use your... You know, it's not... Dzogchen is a difficult word. Tanda means a desire for freedom, a desire for liberation. Westerners hear this idea of no desire, and they think you're not supposed to want anything, even nirvana or Buddha. That's not correct. That's totally wrong. Dzogchen is okay. You're supposed to want Buddha. What's the definition of bodhicitta? Desire.
What?
To want Buddhahood for the sake of others. That's the definition by a Sangha of bodhicitta. And we had it, you know, other people memorized it. It's a kind of desire, but it's a good desire. And we'll talk about it. There's a definition of this bad desire. We'll take a break, I think. And then, what time is it?
It's about 10.
Eight? Okay, good. So take a 10-minute break. Actually, no, I'll do something else. No, if you need lights, those two, they take a while. And you need to use a lighter. The gas thing doesn't work. And you try to use it. There's a lighter up in your area. And then let's do one more thing, and then it'll heat up in the meantime.
Characteristics.
So I'm getting the impression if you go into a retreat with sort of the idea of, well, I'll read some Dharma books while I'm there and I'll walk around outside.
Well, there are study retreats.
No, I'm talking like a single point of concentration retreat.
I mean, you're allowed to take books into retreat. And we'll see. We'll talk about it here. It'll be here. But in Buddhism, there are what are called the inner sciences and the outer sciences.
Yeah.
The other sciences are like medicine, Buddhist medicine, and Buddhist astrology, Buddhist painting, Buddhist sculpture. The fine arts are considered lesser sciences. And then there are the Buddhist sciences, the religious sciences, spiritual sciences. And it's considered very bad in a retreat to do the lower sciences. And it's even considered bad to study them until you've finished them. It's very good, you know, especially if you're a Westerner and you haven't studied these books a lot.
Yeah.
It's very good you have the instructions with you. Because you run into problems and you want to refer to something. That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, be aware, speaking from experience, your mind will grasp on, you know, to this activity, something it can do.
Yeah. I was thinking, if, you know, somebody went into a retreat, you know, for whatever, 6 months or 9 months, and they wanted to attain calm abiding, you know, and they, you know, had a wide perimeter, and they walked around outside and looked at the creatures running around on the ground and looked at the...
I don't think they could do it, or it would be difficult.
Yeah.
And I can say that the opposite works very well.
What do you mean?
Total isolation.
Like the retreat that Yanlon Renzo led in Seattle, the 1 year Shamatha retreat, almost everybody in that retreat did go outside, did go down to the dining hall for lunch and dinner and meals, didn't talk, but availed themselves of the outdoors. And there was one person who really stayed in her room, didn't come out for meal time, took her meals in her room, and she made the most progress.
I believe that. I've tried both.
Is that the year-long?
She did that for a whole year. This is the, I'll give you number four, and by then the tea should be warm. Activities. Mung means many. Fang means give them up. Give up doing many things. You know, and I can speak from experience. I've done many now long retreats. And I used to think that during the sessions I would walk and memorize a book, a holy book, because I'm required to. And even that became a distraction. Or translate a holy book, you know, and that became a distraction. And I think you just have to give up just about everything. It's better.
That's for the retreat. No.
During the retreat. No. Outside, by the way, money, activities, that's a function of your spiritual progress. You know, the Dalai Lamas were traditionally the wealthiest people in Tibet. And some Panchen Lamas were traditionally, and the Dalai Lamas were traditionally the greatest politicians of the country. And they were rough politicians. They weren't like wimpy, you know, like that. They had difficult decisions to make. They were terrible things happened, invasion, you know, internal problems. They had the same problems that Clinton had. And they were great Buddhist practitioners. In other words, and the first tantric practitioners were kings in India who went to the Buddha and said, look, we don't have time for this, all this studying. Can you just give us something really powerful? And that was the original, some of the original tantras were designed by the Buddha for them. So it doesn't mean to give up, you don't have to give up even a very high position in the company, or you don't have to give up money, even wealth, great wealth. It just means that, like, I think it's the seventh Dalai Lama said, the only thing I consider that I own is my bell and my door, you know, my ritual, my two little ritual instruments. And the rest, I own half the country. But I don't feel like it's mine. If someone took it, I could handle that. And the present Dalai Lama, I mean, if you think about the power of a king or a Dalai Lama, he can go to any person in the country and say he needs anything and you have to do it. Not like America, where he, you know, there can be a scandal and they can kick him off. He owns everything in the country, basically. And he just left it and came to India and lived like a baby. You know? That's a good sign. Yeah. You know, that shows it. It means you can have it, and if you have it, use it well. And many people do. Many wealthy people use it very well. But then have the right attitude about it. Be ready to give it up on an instant.
So like being Pat Robertson without the urge to ask people for money.
So John Mohawk, it means give up doing a lot of things. Don't see you eating. We're talking about a retreat in which you're consciously trying to develop something. You go into that retreat thinking, by the time I come out, I'm going to have perfect energy. And it takes
time. It seems like that contradicts what you said earlier. This is saying give up a lot of things, but not everything.
No, it means... Well, it means do the few things that you have to do, which is set up your altar, you know, clean the floor. Even that you can get obsessed on, you see? Your mind plays tricks on you, you know? Maybe I should spend a little more time preparing the altar, you know? I'm not quite sitting quite so long, you know? Maybe I should get up and change the incense right now. Mm-hmm. Your mind doesn't want you to sit there. Okay, have some... Have some tea and we'll start in 10 minutes.
Good,
that's why I'm talking about
it.
when a good teacher knows the time to smack his head and try to help it, it's very good. Switching back. This means that if you've been in a long retreat, you know. Can you hand me that paper? Now we are. Yeah, right? I'm sorry. You were going. Siddham Dhamma. When you do a deep meditation in a deep, long retreat, if you've ever done it, if you go into the retreat with any bad deeds on your conscience, you will never you will never be able to develop good concentration. Forget it. And it's just in general with concentration. If you have any activity which you which you're doing regularly, which you know in your heart to be wrong or harmful, you won't be able to develop concentration. Most of us who do bad deeds, even though we know they're wrong, in my case, one of them is that I say harsh things to people at work because I want to joke and I say the wrong thing and I hurt someone's feelings. Common, very common with me. You can't control yourself. You know, if the idea is you know it's wrong, you're trying to stop it, but you can't control yourself. Then you just have to keep doing proper confession that we're talking about and try to prevent yourself. I mean, if you're working on it, it's not that you can't have concentration. But if you are, just particularly with monks, if you're trying to hide something wrong that you're doing, you cannot reach. You know, we say if you hide, a monk can commit his worst, he can break almost any vow and not lose his vow. In fact, he can break any vow and not lose his vow, as long as he doesn't hide it. You know, as long as he tells people. So it's very important that you not go into a retreat or you not try to develop good meditation with anything on your conscience that you know to be bad. And in general, leading up to your retreat, you should try to be really good for a while, if you can. And most of us, if you know it's wrong, you can't stop it. Then make sure you have a good outlet for confession. The minimum is that you confess it in front of your image. In your altar. But much better if you can do it to your mama. Because it's much more embarrassing. And you probably won't do it. If there's any way you can get out of telling your mama. I've done really bad things. And sometimes when I couldn't control myself, I would set a goal and I'd say, I'm going to tell Rinpoche. If you know Rinpoche, he's tough. You know, so I did not want to tell him openly what I do. So I would rather restrain under any circumstances. If I had promised myself I would tell Rinpoche, I would be pretty safe not to do this thing. So, although not always, and sometimes I have to go to him and tell him, it's very embarrassing. So, I mean, but it's once you get into that habit of revealing to people, to your lama, what you've done in the house, it's very, very healthy, very, very good for you. And your mind, your conscience will be clear, and then your meditation will be really nice. So, this is again one of those things. I've had many people come up to me and say, I tried to develop shamatha and nothing happened. I went into retreat. I got a little happy for a few days. I got a little calm. I could hear my heart beat in my ears and stuff. And then nothing happened, you know. It's because they haven't prepared properly. It's one of these things they're not doing properly. And you won't be able to get calm. Everything under over here. Say Namdo.
Namdo.
Namdo is a very hard word to translate into Tibetan. It can mean fantasy, it can mean imagination, it can mean a long thought. I've translated it as a stupid thought in your deck, but you know. And it refers to, in this case, it's desire, but it can be anger and other kinds of thoughts. But we mainly mean desire. Desire means two things here. One is the object of the senses are sometimes called objects of desire in Tibetan. It doesn't mean a pretty lady, or it doesn't mean a big pile of money or something like that. It just means sounds, unique colors, tastes, sensations on your body. When you get deep into meditation, you will have to withdraw from those also. That's why it's so important to get your body into the right position, because once you take that position, you're going to shut, you're going to withdraw from your body. You know, you're not going to be aware anymore of your body. So it should be in a position that when your mind withdraws from the body, it can keep breathing and going on without falling over, without the mouth drawing out, and without slobber coming down your temple. You know, I mean, when you're in deep meditation, the body should be so supported. In India, sometimes they would put the Hindu meditators, which I did mention 20 years ago, they had a special thing to keep the body up while they were in meditation. So we want to, you're going to withdraw from all of your senses, and that means to give up nanta, to give up those kinds of perceptions. It also means just to give up wanting anything. And that's the main sense in which Tsongkhapa, in his commentary, he says in his commentary, which you can read in the back, this desire also means here any kind of desire for anything in your life. Any normal worldly thing in your life. And he says, think about it. Trying to get them, you do bad deeds. You cause other people pain. You cause yourself pain. Trying to get worldly objects. Secondly, they're doomed. You know, even if you get it. You've been in this situation. I've had students come to me, can you give me some practice that if I do it, I'll be a good job? And I did. And some of them did. But I knew what was going to happen. After 6 weeks, I said, I hate this job. It's so bad. It always changes. You know, every desirable thing changes. Every good thing you lose. Every worldly good thing you will lose, period. And so Tsongkhapa in his commentary, which he can read, he says, you know, think about it. You're crazy. It's crazy. Don't go and try to go into meditation wanting. You have to go into meditation with an attitude of renunciation. Anything else in your life is you're going to lose. Sometimes I think the worst thing at work is that you get to be a vice president. And then you find out there's nothing there. And then you're stuck. It's very embarrassing to go to the vice president and balance yourself out. You know? But you have to actually quit it. You eat, nothing can satisfy you, and whatever you get of all the things you struggle to get, you will lose. And you'll have suffering as you lose it. So, give it up. Give up those kinds of ideas. Give up those thoughts.
One question about meditation and the senses, and all those little things that you do with commentary, with incense and all that stuff.
Yeah. It can be. I mean, if you are... I've found in long retreats that I had to put out the incense, that the smoke would distract me and the smell would distract me. And I would start opening my eyes and know, maybe I should move it over. You know, I mean, anything except meditating. If you're distracted by anything, chop it off. So if it's bothering you, stop. Get rid of it. Fung means to get rid of, give up. We had it before. Okay, one more point.
So the whole thing is get rid of sense desires.
Yeah, or, and also, get rid of a desire for anything in your life that's not related to, it's impermanent. It's not related to your reaching nirvana. Because that's the only thing that really counts. It really is. Nothing else will help you. Nothing. Even the comfort that you achieve at this level, you know, right now, you're relatively young, you live in a comfortable house, you have enough food, you must lose all those things. You must lose any kind of attractiveness you have in your body. You must lose whatever health you have. And I think what bothers me and a lot of other people here, maybe, you must become stupid. You, I'll forget all my Tibetan. I'll forget most of what I studied. You know, if I live long enough. I mean, that's, you're doomed to mental decrepitude also. And that's frustrating. If you, as you start to age, that's very frustrating. Whatever good deeds you do are going to have to be so ingrained in you that as you get stupid later on, they're habitual. Because you're not, no longer going to be able to conceive of these good ideas you have. Everything fails. So that don't go after things that are going to plant seeds that are worthless. You're going to lose everything you have. And then I hear these, I always hear these ladies, they're so funny. I'm not going to get fat like another one. You know, I go, you know. When I was a teenager, I used to check out the mother first, you know, because if the mother got fatter, the mother looked all the, the daughter's going to get the same, you know. Come on. What do you think? You think you're different from the millions of generations that came before? We're all going to be. It's no... It's silly. There's nothing you can keep except very deep seeds of dominance.
They go on.
Okay. So Kapa then says, and this is the last thing that's on your homework. You've had this last week, remember? Gomrim. Gomrim is the book from which he took all six. Everything I've said tonight, Kapa took from Gomrim.
So Kapa took it from Gomrim?
Yeah.
I thought you
he
said...
He took the first step from Asanga. Yeah. And so did Gomrim.
Okay.
Okay? So don't get confused. I'll repeat that.
So about two and three?
Tonight we talked about six conditions. The first condition was staying in a conducive place. That has five parts to it which you don't have to remember. Not responsible for it. Those five parts came from another book by a friend. But all six of what we talked about tonight, the whole list that you have now, those came from Gomrim. Written when?
And we talked about it. He was the one who defeated the Chinese master.
Kamarashima. So as usual, Tsongkhapa is saying, I didn't make this up, this is not my idea, it comes from a very good source, it's from the Gomrim of Kamalashi. Gomrim means stages of meditation. You recognize the rim as in long rim, right? It's three huge blocks. See that? It's beautiful. We have a stamp for it. So that was written in 1783.
So is the Abhidhamma Kosha also then in the Gomrim?
Now, what about Abhidhamma Kosha? Abhidhamma Kosha is the source for two of the six ideas I talked about tonight. Two of the conditions I talked about tonight. What would you mean? Yeah. Not wanting a lot of things. And being satisfied with whatever you get. Originally came from the Abhidhamma Kosha. And then Kamalashila used Bill. So if I ask you on the homework, who wrote the book for all six, you'll say, Kamalashila and the Gomrim. Then if I say, who wrote the book for those two concepts, being happy with whatever you get and not wanting it, that's the Bandhu in the other book. And then if I say, who wrote
the five parts of the first thing I talked about, which is conducive to I just want you to get it straight. You don't get confused. I have this very... Yeah, one more time. The source... By the way, who wrote the whole book? It's not on your homework. Tsongkhapa is talking. Tsongkhapa is pulling his... what he's using for all six that I've talked about tonight. Which are what? I gotta remember. You have to meditate on it. The place, and then the place, not wanting many things, being satisfied with what you have. What's number four? Yeah, giving up a lot of things. Then morality. And then, what's number six? Yeah, getting rid of desire and similar stupid thoughts. All six of those come from Gorman. Who wrote Gorman? Come on, when did he live? We don't know exactly. Who is Tsongkhapa using for the very first one of those six? The five parts of the six, where a stay in a place where there's no wild animals. Yeah, a song of love. In his spiritual Who is the source that Kama Shiva uses for the second thing? Not wanting many things and being easily
satisfied.
That's his path. Yeah.
You said that there's a Sanskrit version of this?
The Sanskrit is available. It was originally written in Sanskrit. Why don't we have the Sanskrit of 99% available?
It
was burned by the Muslims when they came to India.
But you also said that Kamala Shiva was the person who defeated the Chinese school of meditation in Tibet. So we were.
Oh, he was a visiting scholar.
He came from
India. Yeah, he came from India. He was one of the first carriers of Buddhism from India.
He wasn't a native Tibet.
No, he was Indian. We're only studying the classics, the Asian classics. Okay. What time is it? Oh God, I'm going to finish something. I'll say one more thing. Maybe I can make it late anyway. he says, by the way, you should be aware that there's another set of conditions which, and this is not on your homework, just for your interest, okay? There's another set of conditions which help you develop concentration, and they are... Which one of the perfections is concentration?
This one.
Number five of six. And he says, remember, the first four are also called. So the first four are supporting the fifth. And the first five support the sixth.
So what's
they are like that. Not only like that, there's other relationships also.
So the first supports the second supports
generally, the fifth. Generally. And he quotes a sangha. He says that. Okay. He's calling it Sangha. And what he's saying, what are the first four perfections for people who are brand new? Charity, giving.
Morality.
Patience, meaning we don't have a word in English, not getting angry when the time comes and you should get angry. See, patience is also what you do when you're waiting for the bus. It doesn't mean that. It means not to get angry when the time comes. And there isn't a good word in patience partly comes in, but it means when that guy at work says that thing that just hurts you a lot, and I get it every day, you get it every day. If you work in a large office, somebody says something during the day that hurts you. You chill out, okay? You know, you don't get angry. This is a great, great Buddhist practice. Shantideva says it's the most beautiful Buddhist practice. At the moment of heat, not to react, not to get angry. That's the third. What's the fourth? Those are lousy words for Sunkang Gela Dho Om. That's a Shantideva description. Sunkang Gela Dho Om. What is the definition of effort? Effort's a good translation. But what does it mean? It means to enjoy doing good deeds. That's the definition of Buddhist practice. Enjoying helping someone, doing something like doing something good, taking some kind of pleasure, getting off on doing good, is the definition of fourth perception. And those are all conditions which help you reach this perception, which is consciousness. So I'll leave you with, this is what Tsongkhapa puts at the end. Sometimes after he's finishing quoting all the great Indian masters, including the Buddha, he'll quote some Kadampa. Who are the Kadampa? These are the pioneer... I talked about last time. These are the pioneer Buddhists of Tibet. They are the, you are the Kadampas of the move of Buddhism to America. You know, you are the people who were not Buddhists from here. And they were really great practitioners. They were wonderful. As they matured in their knowledge, they were very wonderful Buddhists. So Geshe Thumba was one of them. Geshe Thumba says, by the way, Geshe used to mean any spiritual teacher. Now it's a degree in a Buddhist monastery or a doctor as well. And it used to mean just any spiritual teacher. And he says, I'm translating from this event. When we find ourselves unable to develop deep concentration, we blame it on the instructions that we got. We go and look for some different instruction. The real problem, though, is that we have failed to prepare ourselves as described. In other words, look, if you've ever tried to do a retreat, or if you've ever tried to do a morning practice, and you didn't get much results from it, it could well be, not only this, but it could very well be that you haven't done these preparations. So try them. So what you're meditating on this week is those six conditions. Just go over them in your mind, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, what are they? And use those six preparations that you've had, which were what? So just to go, let's see if you did meditate. What was the first thing, preparation? Cleaning up the room.
Taking refuge.
Sitting down.
Posture.
Visualizing. Actually, imagining that they're coming into the room. That's even better. Five? Five? Yeah.
Very obstacle to create.
If I had a wrong reaction, just wade through the... This is what they do in the monastery. If the students aren't ready, the debate master gets his role. He wades through the place. He gets anybody in sight. He does.
It's the 7 degrees.
Yeah. 7 degrees. And then last?
Pressing
the button. And the 7 you know perfectly, so I don't have to. I have a couple of announcements. One is, I don't know if you guys know Alan. Alan has AIDS. He's been in this class before. He's in the hospital now at New York Hospital. Room 1750.
He was in the English class?
He was in the Tibetan. But he also came before we started this class. And he's a very good practitioner. So I think it's even good for you to see him. And I asked him the other day if he minded if people came. And he said, no, I don't mind. In fact, I would like it, because sometimes I get lonely and I don't cry. He's a very strong-minded man. But so if you have a chance, I think he would like that. New York University. New York Hospital. 68th in New York. Last name is Tung, T-U-N-G. He'll be there for a while. He was an actor. He was very handsome. Also, Mark has raised also. And I want, we had a big discussion about whether I should tell you guys about it. I think I should.
Who?
Mark here. And I want to tell you because if anyone has a problem with it, you should know. I don't have a problem with it. I'm happy to have it. But I feel it's my responsibility. Next thing you want to know.
Channel 13
tomorrow. What
time? 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. There's a movie about.
Flag over Tibet. Red flag.
There's a movie about.
20 years of oppression. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's got some of the footage of the riots.
Who made it?
I love the movie.
Also, one more thing.
On that topic, a lot of people that got back tomorrow because somebody here is exporting
Oh, you mean the throne again.
So many times. Then we had one more thing. If anybody in this class is doubling into this class, if you're new and you haven't taken, if this is your first night, you have to talk to me, because you're only allowed to miss 2 minutes this morning. So if you want to attend the minutes, you have to, we have to talk. And,
the Israelis call it a kickback question.
Can I ask one question?
The sergeant rings me up at 3 a.m. because 50 mile high. And so stupid guys, can we bring our pack?
So on the six perfections, so really, the first one, charity. You have to do charity, or you can't develop wisdom if each supports the next. Is what is my understanding?
It's symbiotic. Actually, each one supports each other. One.
So it's not linear that way.
No,
it's explained as linear and also as non-linear. In other words, you do have to have good charity to get to morality. Good charity helps good morality, but it's not necessarily...
One, and not, if you don't have one, you can't get the other.
Good morality, normally you're going to end up doing charity too. And they also say that they can't be called perfections unless they're done with wisdom. So it's a catch 22. And they support each other.
Can you perfect the earlier ones before you perfect the later ones?
No.
Or are they not really perfected
the
until they're all perfected?
The true perfection of them occurs in relation to the bodhisattva bhumis, and that's what defines the bodhisattva levels. The 10 bodhisattva levels are defined by perfection of this perfection. So the first bodhisattva level you perfect bhumi.
So you can perfect the earlier ones.
You do.
Or you can only perfect the earlier ones.
And it's not called perfection, it's called attain an incredible ability to practice it. You know, some kind of super ability.
Are you
going to
give
chant to? Excuse me? Oh, okay. If you don't know those prayers, open your example to the beginning.
This is the end of Class 3.